The Zone Coverage Podcast Network.
You can put it on the board!
Woo!
We are here for Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We're part of the Zone Coverage Podcast Network, which you can find on Twitter at Zone Coverage MN. I'm your host, Brandon Warren. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon _ Warren. Across the seat from me, working the dials, twisting the knobs, anything you can imagine a producer will do, is Tom Schreier at TSchreier3 on Twitter. Tom, what's the good word?
I'm feeling enlightened because I read Mike's story on bunting. It was good. It answered
some questions. Oh, yeah, and he actually had gone into detail with Boog Shambi. I wouldn't necessarily call him a friend of the show, but a friend of mine for sure. Mike, St. Paul Pioneer Press, thanks for joining us, and good job getting the Boog pull.
Well, I've known Boog since my first days covering the Marlins in 98. You know, he was down there, part of the radio. I think he was doing pre and post, and Boog and I have killed many hours on what they used to call the rain delay spectacular, and there were many rain delays at Marlins games, and so he'd have a local beat writer on. They don't do that here for some reason. They don't have many rain delays, but they like to play Chris Atterbury's interviews with authors, which is nice. Mm-hmm. But Boog would do that. He would pull different ones in there, and just a great guy. He's had a fine career, and he's got a long way to go, too. So I've always viewed him as someone who you can tell on and off the air is constantly trying to stay abreast of the latest trends in the game, and does so in a respectful manner to both scouting and analytics. And we had talked about that when the Twins were in New York the first time in mid-September, and then I asked him if he wanted to go on the record with some of his thoughts when we were there for the wild card game, and he was kind enough to do so. So I thought that added a good element, because I certainly had plenty of you know, it's not always a pleasant topic for the manager to talk about something that he's running counter to the industry trend on. And but he doesn't, obviously it didn't cost him his job, because he's back for 3 more years.
Right.
I do think that you might see some tweaking of how it's employed going forward. But he made his points. Chris Jimenez was very good on that topic. I thought Zach Granite, because that's something that he has highly in his skill set, was good. I didn't get a chance to use my Dylan G material, but he gave me the pitcher perspective. We could talk about that, too, if you want. But so much to talk about with the manager back for 3 more years, and access the other day, 90 minutes of total access to the decision makers.
Yeah, and my Boog story, just to be brief, is I met him at 2013 when the Indians clinched in Minneapolis. So mm-hmm. it was kind of fun to meet a national perspective there. I think Chris Singleton was in town, Buster Olney. And so there were a lot of people in the mix. I didn't get to meet Buster. I was too intimidated. He actually sat right behind me. So
he's a great guy.
Yeah, someday I'll get to meet Buster, yeah. and who knows, kind of hopefully having a relationship there. But having a more relevant Twins team helps, and that means more national types will be buzzing around. Something that will help that is continuity at the manager position. And again, that's what basically the crux of today's episode is that there has been a 3-year agreement, if you've been under a rock and have not heard yet, Paul Molitor managing this team through the 2020 season under his next contract. Mike, what I wanted to ask you is, to start anyway, since the last out in the Bronx until, let's just say, maybe 2 days afterward, or whenever whispers started coming out that maybe it was more likely than not that Molitor would be back, what would you say your highest confidence level was that something was going to get done in before anybody knew that it was going to happen? Were you confident, not confident? Could you put a number on it?
Well, it I don't know if I can play that game the way you'd like me to, because it did ebb and flow over the course of the weekend, and I would just stand by a series of reports that I put out there, both at TwinCities.com and via Twitter, that I thought I had a pretty good read on how the weekend flowed, or how the basically, you know, we were given the official timeline of the meeting that we didn't know about until Tuesday, that basically Mulder was invited back around lunchtime on Wednesday as groggy executives met with him in Edina. It helps that the GM, the CBO, and the manager all live in Edina. But so I don't know. I should have found out exactly which coffee shop they went to, because I'm sure they needed some.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to assume a Caribou. But which you shouldn't assume. So from that point on, they had at least the idea that they wanted him back. That was good. But then it did take time because there were a number of issues to go through. Now, there was a lot of happy talk at the press conference on Tuesday and a lot of alignment talk, which I'm a little tired of, in terms of staff change. Taking away the pitching coach, we know Brandon and Tom, and you guys have been in so many of those times in Mahler's office where he has had a chance to talk about Neil Allen and his trust level with him, and it's a friendship now on and off the field because of what Neil went through in his life and what he went through in 2016, where he had to step away. And Paul Mahler did not want to move on from Neil Allen. I'm quite confident in that. I've talked to Neil, and I've talked to people who know them both. But the decision was made collectively, I suppose, after conversation, that the Twins could do better on the pitching side of things, and that Falvey and Levine have ideas and maybe a pretty interesting opportunity to go out there and get a different voice for the pitching staff after it finished 19th in starters ERA after being dead last. And I think they moved up four spots in relief ERA this year with a bunch of kids, but they're still 22nd. So still more meat on the bone. And but if you're going to tell me that there was really nothing to talk about but crossed T's and dotted I's over from the Wednesday coffee meeting to Monday when the deal was announced, Monday afternoon, I would tell you that that would I don't believe that, no.
Well, and they said they didn't want to address it in season just because they didn't want it to be a distraction. And also, to me, that signals that they were pretty sure very early, or at least not super recently, that they were going to make at least one change on the coaching staff. Mulder said he thought they were going to bring back probably the rest of the staff, though that is not finalized. Do you get the sense then that, yeah, they probably knew fairly early, or again, not, you know, it's been a while that they've known maybe Neil Allen was on the way out?
Well, a couple of things. You know, they came in, Falvey and Levine came in officially, you know, early last November, and then went straight to the GM meetings. I was out there in Scottsdale, and that very night after they arrived, Derek made the call himself to Bernanski and Butch Davis and fired them. So two changes right away on Mulder's coaching staff, his original coaching staff. There were some fine additions, and I think they gained some confidence in the additions of James Rowson, who we've talked about a great deal here,
mm-hmm.
and Jeff Pickler, who we probably have not talked about enough, and Jeff Smith did very good work with the catchers too this year. So those were three really good additions. The Neil thing, I had an odd feeling about from the beginning. I'm quite sure that Mulder drew the line, or at least made it clear that he would not have been comfortable with blowing up his whole staff after off a 103 loss season, nor should he be comfortable with that, because often that can lead to a manager just stepping down.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, they had the Rowson hitting summit down in Fort Myers with all their top amateur scouts, their top pro scouts, all their instructors, hitting coaches at every level, Rick Eckstein, the minor league hitting coordinator, James Rowson, the new minor league hitting coach, Rudy Hernandez, assistant hitting coach. They laid it all out as an organization. Hitting, and Falvey was there, and I believe Levine was there. It was it was multiple days. It was very energizing for them. They wanted to have that complete agreement throughout the system, what they were looking for as hitters, and some of the truisms that would flow through throughout the way they went about viewing hitting. They did not have that level of summit with Neil Allen at the front of the room. They had a version of it crammed in to the early days of spring training between the days that they arrived. I believe they did it in the very first days after they were on the field. They didn't have as many scouts available to them. They didn't have, I suppose they had the minor league side of it there, but it wasn't quite as elaborate of a rollout of this is what we believe in pitching. Neil, take it from here. So you had a bad feeling for Neil from that point forward. And just the fact that Derek Falvey's stock in trade is pitching and modern pitching trends and where it's going from here and instruction. And he's got a very long list of people throughout the game that he's been cultivating for years to pick their brains or eventually to hire in some capacity. So when Eric Rasmussen went, the next canary in the coal mine was when Eric Rasmussen, as minor league pitching coordinator, was dismissed or not brought back as his contract expired. You did get the sense that, okay, there could be a ripple effect here, and they want to do more with pitching, and that probably wouldn't play out well for Neil. So not surprised. Neil himself told me he was not surprised that he was out, but he had been hopeful that he would stay.
Well, if it weren't going to be in that role, though, I mean, obviously he was in a minor league role with the Tampa Bay Rays, an inherently emulatable staff and rotation and pitching, whatever. I mean, coaching staff, all that. Did you think there was a chance that maybe like a Pete how do you say his name? Pete, the manager.
McCannon.
Did you think there was any sort of chance that he could be reassigned to the minor leagues to reprise that role and replace Raz? Or were you thinking it was probably going to be big leagues or bust with Allen?
I don't know that I thought it through to that extent, but in talking with Neil, even now, he's really hopeful of latching onto another pitching coach job. You know, he waited a long time in the majors. He waited a long time for that first opportunity. He's very thankful still to Terry Ryan and to Paul Molitor for choosing him over a very talented group of finalists there, as you recall, the one that included Frank Viola and Carl Willis. And Carl Willis now a free agent as well after the Red Sox fired John Farrell. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't shock me if Carl got another look with his, as I've tweeted, that he also had time, a very fine run in Cleveland pre-Falvey, and then came back to the Indians as an overall pitching advisor while Falvey was there. So I could see that still as a fit. Willis, a link back to the 91 Twins out of their bullpen. But there are plenty of very interesting names to be had, and the fact that they were able to go find Rausen, who had been in the majors before. He did have major league hitting coach experience. We shouldn't forget that. And I asked Thad, and I do get a sense that if possible, they would like to have a person in the new pitching coach role who has been a major league pitching coach before. People may say retread, okay, whatever. By definition, James Rausen was a retread, but he nailed it. That was a great hire, and also good news, as I was able to find out finally that Rausen is under contract along with Pickler and Eddie Guardado already. They're already under contract for 18, so they don't have to ward off teams that might be coming after the hot pitching or hot hitting coach who's getting a lot of press. So only at least for another year. But, you know, I'm happy to discuss any names that have come across here. I don't want to offer up any beyond the ones I've already printed. And, you know, Jim Brower, the ex-Gopher, is one that is now Cubs minor league pitching coordinator, and he was one that was on their radar 3 years ago, but I don't believe he got an interview at that time. But he's very interesting and was just at Target Field last month for a pitching seminar, fan-based, that I wish I had attended, but I didn't even know it was happening.
So do you think, you know, they talked about making concessions on each side or any negotiation is going to require that. Do you think that was the big one for Molitor, or do you think there were others in terms of we want you to do something differently? You know, he says they don't meddle in his on-field decisions. With that said, that's more of an in-season thing. Hey, you know, bat Mauer first, start Bill Wedman if you're talking about Little Big League. But you can talk about those things off season, and it's not meddlesome. Do you think there were concessions beyond Neil Allen of, hey, you know, maybe hit Robbie Grossman leadoff, hit Brian Dozier third, those kind of things? What do you think was part of that conversation?
Well, I don't want to be too presumptuous because they certainly took opportunities, both Mahler and Favi took opportunities to chuckle at the assembled media for our dot connecting that we might have done on what the week conversation was about, that nearly week-long conversation. But we can ignore the chuckling and do what you're inviting me to do right here. And I would say that it would be very strange not to at least say, okay, well, that year went well, and plus 26 wins, that was great. You squeezed about as much as you could have out of that team, probably a lot of improvement. But let's talk about A, B, C, and D in a lighthearted, jovial way, which is the Favi-Levine way. But they're not shy, and if they didn't like some of the things that might have happened in game, they wouldn't be the first in baseball from a front office perspective to express that. The thing I think they're really respectful of, although it's hard to tell just how much of it was conveyed during the so-called 10-minute cooling off period. The listeners might not know, but we know, we experienced it by negotiated right. The media is supposed to be allowed into the clubhouse 10 minutes after the last pitch of a game uniformly, unless there's a team meeting.
Right.
And, or some other extenuating circumstance. The extenuating circumstance is not give the manager a few extra minutes to cool off before the CBO or the GM walk in to rehash the game with him. That can be done after the media. So we had, and of course, we also saw that line blurred in 15 with Torrey Hunter's Club 48. But it started to extend longer and longer, and you didn't know if they were just giving Mahler more time to cool off or if they were really hashing out details. You just saw where John Farrell's firing is cloaked in some mystery, but what's not mysterious is that the Boston media was able to hear through the doors, apparently, of the clubhouse, Dombrowski and Farrell going at it about the Machado-Pedroia dust-up back in May. So anytime we didn't hear any of that through those doors. They're fairly thick, and the walls are made of concrete. But I don't think there was anything ugly. I don't even think that necessarily they asked Mahler to justify his moves in near real time. But I definitely think that with the amount of data and the level of forward thinking that's now present at those two roles in this organization and throughout the analytics department, it would be foolish to think that they didn't at least have discussion of how the games were run within the game, and that includes bullpen usage and matching up, the traditional left on left stuff or reverse platoons. The whole any of it was fair game, and to make sure that they're mostly on the same page. I thought Favi made a good point. He said, the key is that we keep talking. We're not going to agree on everything, but as long as we have agreement on most things, more, they agree on more than they disagree on, then they can continue as a productive pairing or trio. And I believe that's where they are. Mahler has shown repeatedly that he is a lifelong learner. He is not entrenched in even the sacrifice bunting. If you read closely through that story, as I hope people will continue to do this offseason to get a sense of where he really is at on that topic, he pointed out that, for instance, the man on second, nobody out, he doesn't call for the advance him at all costs move anymore, whether it's a ground ball or a bunt. Things like that that are encouraging he's a very sharp guy, but just because he's been in the game for 40 years now doesn't mean that his next 10 years won't be his best.
Yeah, I like that. I like that he's been adaptable and not, I don't want to say this too negatively, but a quote-unquote old baseball man. Because guys stay in the game for a long time because they know the game. You can your Don Zimmers or your Pat Gillicks. I mean, all these names that become institutions in the game are that for a reason, but sometimes the thinking can be antiquated or the moves can be predictable from a mile away. I do want to ask you this, though, Mike, and it's kind of the giant elephant in the room from a connecting the dots standpoint, but do you think, and again, you may not want to answer this, would it be shooting the stars for the stars or realistic to think the Twins could hire John Farrell as their pitching coach?
Well, I mentioned that on Twitter too. That would be interesting. It's another case where this guy just managed the World Series winner.
Well, and he's paid through next year, so it would be. Does he want a year off?
Oh, he'd be a great bargain. He also might, after dealing with that media corps, which is very very inquisitive. He might want to just take a year to recharge. He'll be great at TV if he wants to follow the Francona model.
Yeah, but we'd take it easy on him. I'd be willing to make that part of the deal. Really? I don't know about you, but
Farrell's impressive. I do like him a lot, and he easily could bounce. I would think more likely to another managing role through the Tigers,
Phillies,
or the Mets.
He did a great job with Boston. I mean, all things considered, I mean, Rafael Devers had to come up and lock down third base after they let Panda go. He did a great job with what he had there with no David Ortiz, very little of David Price. Chris Sale was basically the only rotation guy that was terribly good. I think he did a great job, but you know what? It just came down to expectations.
Yeah, and you have to have the appearance of someone has to pay the price for a random second straight year of a random quick exit from the division.
Well, the Red Sox are going to pay the price for like another 6 years and $150 million, though. I'm sorry. That was bad.
Hey-o.
I would say, Farrell did. I think you made good points. I mean, and even the one thing that's probably going to come out that, you know, well, he quote unquote lost the clubhouse or he couldn't get the players to play for him. Well, that's been a toxic group going back to even Francona. You go back to Francona's last year. That was the fried chicken and beer group. That was Wacky and Beckett and those guys.
The fun bunch, and
Pedroia has been the one constant throughout all this, and he's a champion and a gamer. But if he's the leader that they portray him as, and I don't know him that well, I've only talked to him a few times. I just find him an annoying presence on the field. I'm not a huge fan of the way he just carries himself and swings from his heels on everything, even when we're up by 12 runs. But whatever, that's the modern game. But if he's the leader that he's portrayed as, I would think he would have been able to put his thumb down on some of the immature behavior that's happened through the years. And so, I don't think John Farrell's stock has been hurt terribly by this, but I also think that he'll either probably prefer a year of broadcast slash golf or jump directly into a managing job. Joe Girardi, not available now, it would appear, after after the miracle in Cleveland.
How fickle are we?
And that's as it should be. But he's you know, if he gets a new deal, a new 4-year deal or something, that's going to have amazing staying power. His tenure will go beyond Torrey's there if he stays.
Wow, but that's pretty amazing.
Throughout it, which is amazing. But back to the Twins, there. You know, I have a preliminary list, but I mean, even the guys that are obvious that have already been mentioned, they just got fired. I mean, look, Rich Doobie in Detroit, they took Verlander off his staff. Okay, good luck with that. Look what he did with the Phillies when they had all those big names. He can handle the big names. He can help kids. Dave Island in Kansas City, very good. He's out. Twins know his work from near terms and as a division opponent. And Falvey, too, going back to his Cleveland days. I've mentioned Danny Clark, the Rangers' long-term coordinator of minor league pitching, who's very well regarded, and Thad Levine very much admires his work, and it's probably overdue for Danny Clark to get a chance as a major league pitching coach. So I do believe that he's going to be on their list. But how many will they interview? Will they shoot for the moon on one of them? Will they ask permission? Will they ask permission on a Mickey Callaway, even knowing full well what he makes currently? And maybe if they say, we'll double your salary, do you want to come here and start over? Would he? I don't know. It's a call that at least they would have to look into.
Yeah, but I mean, it feels unlikely to me, but I hear what you're saying.
No, definitely unlikely because people are portraying him as manager material. But
yeah, I was going to ask you about that, actually.
I don't know. I mean, Farrell, it was for a long time, until Larry Durker, really, Roger Craig had been maybe the Bob Lemon, former pitchers as to go into managing and doing it well. It was a very short list. And then you know, it started it. Bud Black has done it effectively and got the Rockies to the postseason. Farrell was another example. It can be done, but they view the game. The knock on them always as manager candidates was that any pitcher or pitching coach views the game through a more narrow, much more narrow lens. He's really only worried about his guys on the mound, whereas a lot of managers tended to be former catchers because they were used to looking. Not only did they have to know pitching, having worked with pitchers directly, but they got to see the whole field.
Well, and one thing I wonder about is if Callaway maybe gets the Phillies job and then Farrell goes back to Cleveland under Tito. I mean, that's another thing you have to combat, and that's why it's all the speculating is like power rankings. It's like all that fun stuff. It's fun, informed speculation that gets page views, clicks, and all that stuff, but doesn't necessarily need substance. With that said, I could see Callaway going to Philly being the answer to John Farrell. You know, Farrell obviously was the hotshot pitching coach in Toronto, and Boston needed a lift. You know, after was he immediately after Bobby V?
Yes.
So it's Francona, Bobby V, and then Farrell, right?
Yeah, 5 years of Farrell.
Yeah, so I would say, you know, it'd be kind of funny if the switcheroo was Farrell going to Cleveland, taking over for Callaway, who's the next pitching coach to get that bump. And again, that's not undeserved. Callaway has gained that reputation, although I wonder, you know, should that give teams pause? I know no two guys are the same, but with how Farrell worked out, is that a plus for Callaway, a minus for Callaway? I think it should be a plus. I mean, he did a good job. It just was a head had to roll. I guess I don't know how to diagnose the situation, and I'm not sure. I lean on you because I trust your expertise, but I think we're all kind of guessing at this point.
Yeah, I'm sure Farrell will do fine. I don't know that if I'm his agent, I'm advising him to go right back to being a pitching coach just because I think he's proven that he's a championship level manager. So I got one name for you, and I got one name to eliminate for you on your show, and one name to throw out as a very interesting possibility if we can transition. But
yeah.
I checked on Derek Johnson with the Brewers, who did fine work, a former Vanderbilt pitching coach, and everybody knows that he's a brilliant guy, and he is definitely already under contract for next year. I wasn't sure if they had extended his original deal, but because I believe he went there on a 2-year deal, but he's good for 18. So
did he work with Price?
With the Brewers?
No, with Vanderbilt.
Did he have David Price?
Yeah.
I believe so.
He's worked with some great pitchers and young pitchers that were great.
But I'm told by a person who knows that he's not going anywhere. So even if the Twins were to ask. But another high end, maybe the highest paid current pitching coach, which could be a complicating factor for anybody trying to steal him away, depending on how game five here goes, is that Mike Maddox, I believe, was on a 2-year deal. And Mike Maddox's previous job for a number of years, going back to 2009, was where? Texas Rangers.
Yep, exactly.
So there'll be a comfort level immediately if Thad Levine picks up the phone and calls a free agent Mike Maddox and wants to at least have a conversation with him about the Twins job.
Dusty's not under contract for next year either.
Absolutely. So there could be change. If the Nationals have already extended Maddox beyond, they hired Maddox before they hired Dusty. They hired him before they hired Bud Black. I mean, they that was a glamour hire. He's tremendous at what he does. But the big thing why it would be a fit here is that Thad would have worked so closely with him and seen his methods and how they work. And now that's an amazing staff, especially in the rotation. In Washington, it's not one that you're, as a pitching coach, looking to get away from. It's the kind of one that can turn you into a Mazzoni, and it's already doing so. But Maddox did great work with a lot of middling pieces in Texas, too.
Yes,
he had some high-end, but that wasn't filled with Hall of Famers, and he had to take young power arms and turn them into immediate closers, and he did it. He's one of the best, so... that would be a name to monitor because I believe he's a free agent as well. It's and then there's going to be the whole point of, well, how much do you want to step out and spend on a pitching coach? How many years do you want to give him? The fact that we know they gave multiple years now to James Rousen, pulling him out of the Yankee system, is an indicator that they will give multiple years to this pitching coach.
But do they want to find their next Rowson, or do they want to find the next established guy? Is an interesting point.
That's the question.
Yep.
There are a lot of bright minds, and if you make the point that change is exponential and constant, you definitely probably want to have someone who's not as entrenched. Maybe has had the Rowson model would be someone who's had a small taste of major league coaching, but is still on the rise and under the radar a bit. And I think that'll be the fact they just hired a farm director in Jeremy Zoll from the Dodgers. That opens up the avenue to an excellent Dodgers system of instruction.
Good organization to steal talent from.
Right. So it will. And Daniel Adler coming in there late in September. With his Indians background, and there's at least another organization that he's passed through, but he's been around baseball as well as football more so. So
Jaguars.
Jaguars, Patriots, Browns, I'm thinking more so. He didn't actually work directly with the Indians. I take that back. Worked in the commissioner's office. Mm. But they have their staff meetings are now filled with Scrabble words and SAT words. And more so with ideas, so they're probably going to come up with a name, at least one or two names on that final group of interviewees for pitching coach that we would not have dreamt of.
Right.
And maybe they'll reach even down into the college ranks. Obviously, that's where Derek Johnson came from, with a stopover with the Cubs, overseeing their entire pitching instruction. But they have their finger on the pulse of what's happening in college baseball too. I think they'll put together a formidable list.
Well, I would be remiss if we didn't come full circle and tie this up in a bow before we let you go. Falvey said and left it in no uncertain terms, Paul's our guy. Everyone kept asking, well, what about going and getting your guy, your guy, your guy? He said, Paul's our guy. From where the relationship started with that lunch in Cleveland before he officially had the job, that's Falvey I'm talking about, not Molitor, to today, which is probably almost exactly a year, how much convincing do you think they needed that Molitor was their guy? Because I know they've shaken things up at the different levels of the organization, top to bottom, but Hall of Fame resume, Minnesota, born, has some weight. Do you think the relationship has evolved greatly, or it's just been harmonious because both guys see eye to eye and are generally agreeable folks?
Maybe some of the latter, but I would say that they did have plenty of tests of the strength of their bond. No test more dangerous than the trade deadline. And the way Molitor handled that, the way he kept his team together, there were no apologies at the press conference, no public apologies for the way the all-star closer or the mid-rotation starter that they had just given him, and about-face that came just a few days after Molitor screwed up a double switch in Dodger Stadium.
Yeah.
It was clearly a vote of no confidence in this team, and many took it as a vote of no confidence in Molitor.
Mm-hmm.
But subsequently, I think that it was wise to wait until the end of the year, just to see how they would get through as every little step of it. As Falvey said, when he went all the way through to the final handshake after the loss in Yankee Stadium, he said at that point, Falvey said, we've gone through everything together, Molitor and Falvey and Levine. We've gone through a full season together, the off season leading up to it, the spring training, all those conversations about the 52 players that appeared, 36 pitchers, 16, including Jimenez, 16 starters. They had all the double headers they had the game plan through. They got through all of that without choking each other. And that was encouraging. There was a lot of stress, I'm sure, along the way, especially without any security from Molitor beyond this season, mm-hmm. contractually. So the fact that they were put to the test and they came through it and surprised everybody in a weak year in the American League after the top four teams, and they were the fifth team that got into a postseason that required five. All that bodes well for what they can do now that there is security, momentum, continuity. And, oh, by the way, one of the finest young positional cores in the game. So
yeah.
Very interested to see how they add to their pitching, starting with the pitching coach and other acquisitions, maybe a few trades this offseason. But it seems to be gaining momentum.
Well, Mike, get out and get that story filed so you can enjoy the rest of your day. People, read his work, TwinCities.com, St. Paul Pioneer Press. Let's get you back on soon with Cody. We'll talk about some off-season stuff and see what direction these Twins are going to take. How does that sound?
That would be great. We keep threatening to do that. And
it's going
to
happen.
Let's do that. Let's do it.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Well, I have dinner with him this Sunday at Olive Garden. Don't tell Keith Law, but we'll chat about it and see what works for his schedule. All right?
All right.
Thanks, Mike.
I said hi. All right. See you guys.
Yep. All right, so that was Mike Berardino, St. Paul Pioneer Press. Tom,
yep.
Any takeaways from you? You had me cover the Molitor presser.
Yes.
You got your finger up, one finger up. What's up? What are you thinking?
You owe me Chipotle. Do you remember our deal?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And actually, I want Chipotle for lunch today, so if you want to go after, we can go do that.
Yeah.
I do. I was going to say, I think it was came down to me being uncertain about Molitor being the guy, right?
Yeah, so you thought he might do the Terry Collins route and move into the front office.
Yeah, the Mac... Mike told me how to say it.
Yeah. But no, like it made sense. He has young children. You know, he pointed out. But
they're home here too. So
yeah.
That's something to think about. Let's just say hypothetically, Paul Molitor was from Milwaukee but was managing the Twins.
Sure. Yeah.
Having his family here. What's he at home? Probably 180 days a year, maybe.
Yeah.
Because they're on the road
it's
for
a lot
80.
Of travel.
They're
yeah.
in the spring, and maybe the kids can
Florida.
Come see him.
Yep.
So. There is he gets plenty of family time relative to his peers in the job.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think maybe that helps.
Yeah. Either way, I thought it'd be a 2-year deal. I do wonder if they were going back between 2 and 3 years because a 2-year deal, we know this from the Garden Hire era, is really like a 1-year deal, right? You can always kind of cut that off and justify the cost.
Yep.
This is really a 2-year commitment, but showing. This is not just temporary and that, they're not just catering to the crowd that likes Molitor because he was a Hall of Fame player from St. Paul. I've always said, if anything, I like it just because he's easy to work with. He's very thoughtful.
So was Gardenhire, if we're being perfect honest.
Yeah.
That's the one thing, too, is with all the chatter about him getting back into the game, much as I don't think Boston makes sense, I can't
remember. Tigers, though?
The Tigers?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Go do it now.
Yeah, but I like Guardy a lot. He just was shorter fuse, there'd be more misunderstanding. Like you'd say, I'm just asking about this. I'm not criticizing your decision. Molitor, if he was stressed out, and I bet he was, that he didn't have any insurance beyond this year.
Keep in mind, though, too, I wonder how much it matters that Molitor made $30 million playing or whatever, where Gardenhire played 4 years. I think he had like 700 at bats or something.
He was like a quad A player, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
like the last cut on the 87 Twins.
The other thing too is Molitor's legacy is secure, right? I mean,
yep.
he will always be liked here because he finished up with the Twins and because he was a phenomenal baseball player.
And they can spin it as his contract was over.
Right.
It's spin, but
no, that's how you would say it.
You transition him to a different role, even if it's not a real role. It could be a shell thing you create. It won't hurt his legacy. He'd be like, oh, he was fired.
Yeah.
So I think
no,
he'd be safe.
So, I just felt he very calm, very forthcoming with his thoughts. Mike pointed this out, and I think this is very true, lifelong learner. He's not saying, I am Paul Molitor. This is how it's done, right?
It could be I am effing Paul Molitor, really.
Yeah.
You know,
but no, it's not that. It really, he doesn't expect his players to be as good as he was, which is a good thing. Outside of Byron Buxton and... maybe there's a handful of other guys, but none of these guys will make the impact on the game that Molitor did. Just was such an outlier, so talented. And, even I know this because I saw the tail end of his career, which is crazy to think. But either way, he's been great to work with, and I think I like his temperament. I really liked Mike's piece on the bunting. I do think he could scale it back a little bit, but there are little things. Just talking to Mike Gelfand, who edits our stuff here, longtime Twins guy, and covered the Rod Carew, Gene Mock twins. And talking to you, you know, I mean, there's certain shifts and stuff that don't make a lot of sense that maybe he'll get away from.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, I just think he has a great temperament for this. He does pick up on the little things, and he keeps things from spiraling out of control, you know? And I think that's important.
There is a calming presence.
Yeah.
There's no question about that.
Now,
granted, you could say they spiraled out of control in 2016. Where was he then? So
yeah.
that's why it does.
I should say in the middle of the season. I wrote a column basically saying it's fine that Felvey and Levine were indecisive last year. They didn't really know if they were buyers or sellers. They were very influenced by the games right before the trade deadline, as we just talked about. They have to be decisive now. They have to be aggressive. If they're really worried about Sano, and Sano is going to have surgery, or
sounds like he might. He missed six weeks. So
you know, if he can't get down to that 260 range, I mean, I just think that's probably a better playing weight for him. They have to decide: is he on the Ortiz track, or is not that he's
or Sandoval,
get there,
like you said,
or Sandoval? That's what I wrote.
I mean,
and
a good player, but
yeah,
would meet an untimely career end.
I remember him being really good in San Francisco, and
then really bad in Boston, and now really bad in San Francisco.
I know, yeah, going back.
I mean, I think his career's over.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, they got to be decisive. If they don't like someone, you got to deal him right away before other people figure out he's not as good as they think. Or like, you know, what are you going to do with the pitching staff?
Make it somebody else's problem.
I will say, not
to be insensitive to wait, because obviously, it's a struggle.
One's saying that. This is sports are weird that we know everyone's salaries and we know how much they weigh. You know what I mean? That's just a really weird thing, but that's relevant. We have to figure out the
reality of it is they will make a decision based on that if they have to.
Yeah. But
we're not being cavalier. They will have to use that in organizational meetings.
Yeah.
What the H do we do with this?
And it's not just him. I mean, where's Tyler Jay at here? Where's Cole Stewart at? Is Nick Gordon a shortstop? Right. You know, if you look, I do like what they're doing, where they're moving these Brad Steeles and Darren Johnsons into senior positions and moving. There's a guy my age who just got a job with the Twins, right?
Zoll?
He's 27.
I got a message out to a friend of mine in the business to ask about him.
Yeah.
And I'm waiting to hear back. But I get the sense he's the farm director at age 27.
I know. And maybe he's a whiz kid. I mean,
I think he is a whiz. I mean,
yeah.
You know, Clarence Swamptown on Twitter calls them the Bee Gees, the boy geniuses.
Yeah.
His shorthand is the Bee Gees. Adding a 27-year-old to the mix as the farm director, that, you know, that's like the third horseman to your four horsemen.
Yeah.
It's not changing the fact that it's young people in the game.
Yeah. And hopefully it's progressive and it's cutting edge and it's the Twins we came to love in 02 to 10, right? So, and improve upon that. They're not just a playoff team that loses in the playoffs. you know what I mean? So like,
been there.
Yeah. So I think, and I do like having a guy like Brad Steele who he can lean on and who can bring continuity and who, you know, you need, it's not unlike us with Mike Gelfand, right? We can go to him and say, hey, what, you know, what should we do with our articles or our coverage or whatever? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I like that a lot. I don't know how much it was Neil Allen's fault that the pitching staff wasn't great. I mean, they need to have serious conversations about, is this Kyle Gibson or is Kyle Gibson the player who was in the first half of this season? What do you do with the two spots behind him? You know, I'm assuming Santana will kind of have the same role as the number one guy. I'm assuming Berrios will be number two. I mean, you know, you'd love to have a healthy Phil Hughes. I don't know how realistic that is. And beyond that, you know,
well,
Trevor,
you don't know what a good Phil Hughes will be capable of,
right,
either.
Trevor May, does he become a starter there, or is he in the bullpen again?
Yeah, is he your answer to Andrew Miller?
Yeah, and then the other questions there are, like, how good is actually, you know, Taylor Rogers? Is this Trevor Hildenberger? Is he a shutdown guy, Bucinich, all those guys? So, you know, I do, they have a lot of questions to answer. They have to be aggressive, decisive. You can't have a situation where Trevor Plouffe, who might be out of Major League Baseball next year. I mean, where do you think he is, right?
He's probably going to be on a minor league deal.
He was occupying third base and put Sano, big old Sano, out in the outfield. I mean, you just can't have situations like that. So, you know, I think that was the crux of the column. You can go read it on the site. But the point is...
Yeah, zonecoverage.com.
It's time for them to clamp down here, make some tough decisions. And I kind of ran it through Dozier, how he always had faith in the team, and he is the team spokesman at this point, probably their best player. I mean, I don't think I'm stretching saying that. I like what Mauer did, but
I think Buxton is their best talent.
Yes, highest
their best
upside.
Player.
Highest upside.
You can look at it a number of different ways. Mauer's got the tenure. Dozier's the best player. Buxton's the most talented player.
Yeah.
And Sano has is the wild card in
yeah,
all of it.
Yeah, yeah. So
in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and Polanco and Kepler and you guys. So I think Twins fans are aware of where they're at. It's just you can't just be satisfied with 85. They, you know, I pointed out in the NL, St. Louis had 86 wins, didn't make the playoffs. Or sorry, no, 83 wins. Milwaukee 86 wins, didn't make the playoffs. So 85 won't always get you in. It's not a good
Granted, those teams would have gotten bodied by the Nationals, yeah, Cubs, yeah. Dodgers, whatever.
And I don't know if you want to comment on the playoffs. Well,
just game five tonight.
Yeah.
Well, maybe a post-mortem for Chris from Cleveland just because the
– He's dying. Yeah, I texted him a couple times.
Yeah, see if he's
retired. But, yeah, it's been a fun playoffs. I think we should comment probably after we know more just so it's not all outdated. But, yeah, it's been – definitely fun to watch. I just hope the Yankees don't win the World Series. Yeah,
exactly. But
I'm very worried about
Would you feel any better if they won the World Series after eliminating the Twins?
I don't even know if that matters.
I don't think it does either, but I just don't want to talk about the Yankees.
It'd be
either.
Fun to see Houston kind of team of destiny. There's a lot of fun. NL has a lot of fun stuff going on. But you had something else outside of baseball.
Well, they would kill the SI cover jinx, too.
Yeah, and I really think it'd be funny if that's how it worked out.
Prophecy. Anyway, switching gears completely. The topic du jour yesterday was, and you know this gal's name, so...
Yeah, I don't know her, but yeah, she was at Bleacher Report.
What's her
when
name?
I was there. Alika, I think it's Alika Sendeggi or
okay.
something.
Very, I don't know her name, and it's not out of disrespect for her. I was not aware of her, and I still don't particularly know a lot about her. Embroiled, she did this thing on Twitter. If people are listening, they probably know how Twitter threads work. You say your tweet, your first tweet, you hit send, and then you reply to yourself, and it threads it so that you can, you know, on
multiple
TweetDeck
thoughts,
or whatever,
yeah.
Yeah, multiple thoughts, and it's a great way to basically do the opposite of what the medium wants, which is expanding.
Although they
your
may
story.
Go to 280, but yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I know, I know.
I went
know,
to
I
280,
know.
And it wasn't good for me either. Speaking of Miguel Sano, so she had this stream of consciousness where she basically showed that she was going to work for an unnamed media outlet.
Yeah, she blacked it out.
Which we all deduced, and I don't know how it got found out, but the fact of the matter is that the guys over at Barstool figured out it was them. Well, they didn't figure it out. They knew it was them, but they attacked or returned, they volleyed back after she levied the fact that they wanted her to sign a contract with a clause stating that she would not be suing them if she were to be, I don't know if it was like necessarily sexually harassed, but she would be subjected to their humor in terms of crass jokes, anti-Semitic jokes. I mean, maybe they won't say it out loud, but the fact of the matter is one of their people rips on Jews all the time. You know, you can call a duck a goose. It doesn't change the fact that it's a duck.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
You don't want to say you're anti-Semitic. Well, you know, if it quacks like a duck and walks
duck,
it's probably a duck. So the groundswell of support, as these things tend to go on Twitter, is good for her for standing up for her scruples, her morals, her basically making sure that she as a female is protected from the evils that we in society see them subjected to on a daily basis.
And you see all the time on Twitter, and yes.
So my thought is, though, like, I don't really buy her as this hero. So the guy that's in charge of Barstool, and again, I don't know her name. It's not disrespect to her. I don't know those guys' names either. I've never been to Barstool. In the year of our Lord 2017, I have a fairly good idea of what Barstool is about.
Right.
I had seen the video. It turned up on Twitter Moments, which I accidentally clicked, which is kind of the running joke. Nobody has ever actually been to Twitter Moments.
Yeah, you're trying to
intentionally.
Hit
you're trying to hit mentions or whatever. So I listened to a spiel because I like to listen to things that I don't agree with, just to hear what people are saying. And he says, you know, that she's using this moment with the Weinstein allegations, basically the president being an alleged sexual predator, and again, where there's smoke, there's fire. He says she's using the moment to further herself, rather in addition to, you know, stepping on Barstool on the way up.
Yeah,
and I started thinking about that, and I thought, yeah, you know, why is she the hero here? She was signing with them, and yet people who I see constantly ripping Barstool for being sexist, misogynist, anti-Semitic are like, yeah, go her, and I'm like, hang on a second. Again, in the year of our Lord 2017, if you don't know what Barstool is up to, you've chosen not to, or you have been oblivious. You know what Barstool is about. she not only knew what they were about, but could see the finish line in signing a contract with them.
Yeah.
Reneges based on a clause, and she's a hero. And I'm thinking, yeah. hang on. This, I called it the bad place on Twitter, I guess, the opposite of the good place, which is one of the best shows on TV.
Yeah,
I'm like, hang on. She was agreeing to go work at the bad place, which means ostensibly she knew exactly what she was getting into.
Yeah.
But at the finish line says no, and she's a hero. I'm like, hang on. Why is she a hero? But like Julie Stewart Binks? Any of the women that have gone and worked
who
there?
Had Gronkowski? Oh yeah.
Like why is this woman a hero? Like I'm like, hang on a second here. It doesn't make sense to me that she. There's no way she went into like if the clause in the contract was your breaking point. It wasn't. This place did not become a bad place because of that clause.
Yeah.
They were the bad place. However, Twitter sees them. They were the bad place long before that clause came into play.
Yeah, at the very least, like racy or whatever.
So she went down the path. She got to the end of the maze, climbed over the corn, and got out. And I'm saying, why are we absolving her from going to the end of the corn maze?
Yeah.
And getting the heck out of there. I just don't think she's the hero everyone is trumpeting her to be. And I think we need to consider the fact that like she was going to go work for them. That line is blurred because if she signs that contract, then people are ripping her. Why? How could you possibly do this? This place is sexist. And here's the other thing. I saw Julie Stewart Binks. I think that's her name. She tweeted,
yes.
We have never experienced that sexism, whatever, in this office. If you sign that contract without that clause in it, you're basically saying, fine, you can't sexually harass me, but whatever you do on the website to women outside the website is okay.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
if
you want to be in support of the cause, you have to be in support of the cause of not supporting sexism, being part of a place that allows sexism as part of their thing, whether it's directly or indirectly from these quote-unquote stoolies, which those guys can sit on an upside-down bar stool for all I care about.
Oh my God.
But I get fired up, but it's like, okay, so if she signs the contract as is, she's giving up her principles, which are already in question because she agreed to work there. If she gets them to eliminate that concession, she's saying, I can't be sexually harassed. I don't have to hear dick jokes. I don't have to hear any of this stuff. But what they do to the people in question outside of the organization, I'm fine with, whether it's implicitly or explicitly. So I think she went down this road of trying to out Barstool Sports.
Mm-hmm.
In a fashion or a manner where she, I think, told on herself.
Yeah. So let's start here. We know what they are, right? And so...
Well, I've heard of the Chive. I've heard of I've heard of these places.
Yeah.
Generally, it's getting clicks on bro stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know necessarily what it is, whether it's pictures, again, dick jokes, whatever.
I would say all-encompassing. It's irreverent sports content. I believe Boston-based.
I think that's where it started, yeah.
Yeah. They do have a female CEO. I've heard an interview. Richard Deitch interviewed her a while back on his podcast.
That to me feels like misdirection anyway.
Yeah. She's smart.
I'm not saying they hired her for misdirection.
Yeah.
I'm just saying the defenders that say, well, how could they have... It's like, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, no, whatever. I mean, just anyone who goes to work there knows what they're about. This... Just reading the awful announcing post on it and trying to read into it a little bit, it sounds like this is a contract you sign if you go work at SNL, for example.
Oh, yeah. Or like you can't be upset by jokes.
Yeah. I mean, they say, I understand that, you know, Barstool Sports Company is involved in the entertainment industry. I further understand that because the company's business requires a creative working environment, including exposure to offensive speech, I may be exposed to conduct
right.
and speech.
Right, I think she blew it up in the wrong fashion. I don't.
Well, it's not something you would see at ESPN, probably. You probably would not see it working for Fox Sports. You probably would not see it working for, you know, any of these kind of, you know, a traditional sports enterprise, right?
Right.
I don't know if they see him that way. Now, Barstool will have an ESPN show, it sounds like, an ESPN2 show. They have a big presence. Getting Julie Stewart Binks, just the fact of how big their own personalities are.
I don't
know
anything about Julie Stewart Binks. I just know the name.
She's someone who worked for ESPN, worked for Fox.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I'm just saying, like, I'm not trying to judge anybody based on their name or anything. It's just, I think she knew what she was getting into, this guy you're talking about.
Yeah, and all I know about her is she wrote for 11 Warriors, which is in Ohio State. I believe she's from California, but went to Ohio State. An Ohio State football blog, like a very well-respected blog.
Like SB Nation or what?
I believe it's independent. I can pull it up here. But Bleacher Report, while I was there, pulled her off of there, put her on videos. And again, working for Bleacher Report, I know this because that's where I got my start. I think you had a byline there at one point, right? I mean, like,
wait, you wrote for Bleacher? I'm just kidding.
Yeah, right. But
Google search Tom Schreier Bleacher Report, right. And then spend the rest of your day doing that.
Yeah. She had beef with that article too, and this is why I know who she is. But yeah. Either way, like they, you know, this is a respected site. They're just looking briefly. It is, I believe, it is independent. Has a large crowd. You know, I think Bleach Report just saw an opportunity, put her in video. Again, she worked for Bleach Report. Like, that's not, it's not SI. It's not, you know, The Athletic or, you know, your local newspaper. And so I don't know. I think she probably knew what she was getting to in terms of the content. I'm sure most people would look at that clause, especially if you're not going into like stand up, you know, SNL or something like that. And be a little surprised. I would be surprised even as a guy looking at that, right?
Yeah, but I mean,
but here's
especially
the thing.
As a woman though. I agree with you. Like,
but you know, most people would go maybe read it through and call a friend or talk to a lawyer or
an attorney friend to get clarification.
Right. And you know, she went on Twitter and asked the world their opinion, and she's kind of getting the opinion back, right?
Remind me to never ever do that.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
The Barstool Sports CEO, who we were talking about, Erica Nardini, went on Twitter and kind of clarified some things about that.
I did see some tweets to her. I did not know who she was. And again, this is not disrespect to women in any business or anybody in the business. It's just that if I don't know their names, I'm not going to pretend I know their names.
No. And I only know her because she was on Richard Deitch's podcast doing an interview about taking the Barstool Sports job. But Barstool obviously responded. From what I'm gathering here, you know, probably don't vet these things through Twitter. You can use your account for what you want. You know, it is what it is. You know what you're getting into with Twitter as well. But beyond that, I mean, I think it's not a standard clause probably in a contract like that. It's interesting that we all know that now. Kind of that's the condition you sign in order to become part of Barstool Sports.
Yeah.
And if she doesn't want the job, that's fine. She's been on the Jim Rome show. She's been on ESPN. She was very...
It sounds like she's talented. It sounds like she's I think this was a misstep. I don't think she's the hero that, not necessarily, I wouldn't say social justice warrior Twitter, but the people on Twitter who are particularly sensitive to these sort of things. And again, that's not me trying to convict them of anything they shouldn't be. You be yourself, above all, be yourself and be who you are on Twitter. I think she played it very poorly. And it was, I'm not saying her intent was to get famous off this, because
Based on her
following, based on everything, like it seems like she's obviously talented or well known enough to do her own thing. I don't understand what the thought process was here, and if it was well enough thought out of how could this go sideways on me. And again, I don't think she's the hero that Twitter is making her out to be.
Yeah, and people, that's also that part of Twitter's fault.
Like, I'm not shocked that Barstool, based on the limited knowledge I have of them, would have that clause, because
the entertainment.
They're obviously smart businessmen who have made money and all that stuff. They need to protect themselves. So again, as much as I wouldn't ordinarily give them credit for things, I mean, I was ticked at them for that picture of mine that they used on platforms. They retweeted it. I got a bunch of retweets.
Which
out of
one
it.
Was that?
The Bartolo Colon riding a donkey and picking coffee and all that stuff. Whatever, I understand the business, and I understand the business side of things. And I don't know that anybody comes out looking good.
Yeah.
But she does not look as good as people have made it sound.
Yeah, and I don't know, and part of it maybe is just, you know, there's a lot we don't know. It just seems more akin to almost like going and working for South Park or SNL or something like that than it is working for ESPN.
If you work at South Park and you don't like Jew jokes, one of the characters is a Jew and they constantly make fun of him.
Yeah, and so...
Or they kill Kenny. If you can't handle death,
Kenny,
you probably aren't going to work it, you know. I haven't watched that show in 15 years. So if
outdated reference. Yeah.
I mean, is Ned Flanders still married to Maude?
We assume. I don't know. It's interesting. I think Barstool is unapologetic about who they are. They've certainly had success. Again, they will be on ESPN, it looks like, I think Brian Curtis had that scoop. It's something I track because I work in media. But, I don't know. It was interesting. That was one hell of a rant. I think that was the biggest, probably longest rant we've had on the Midwest Swing podcast.
And maybe, like, all seven people who listen will appreciate it. Again, I don't want it to be, like, I don't know. How I feel about Barstool is it's not hard to tell how I feel about them, but we get too quick to take sides in an argument, and if you see Barstool on one side, you take the other side.
Yeah.
Sometimes gotta hear both sides means you hear both sides and you don't care about how either side handles something.
Yeah.
I think that's...
They can both be wrong in this situation.
I think they are, honestly. Yeah. As much as I'm not totally sure where Barstool was exactly wrong. Again, I don't care for their show, whatever they do. I don't care for how they handle things. But they were protecting themselves, and she didn't care for it. Maybe it just needs to stay at that.
Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting. We're going to get booed out of the studio, so we probably got
to
wrap up.
Well, you've been listening to Midwest Swing, part of the Zone Coverage Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. Check us out next week. We'll get some off-season talk going here. And peace.